Hey, what is going on? It is Crypto Bobby, and welcome to the Crypto Bobby podcast. Today, we're actually going to be jumping back to my conversation over at NAC3 in Los Angeles about a week or so ago. I had a chance to speak to a number of people about my research process and how I dive into white paper research as well as some of the other kind of components to do things as quick as possible. I know nobody really likes reading a white paper, but I think it's important to understand, and it's researching cryptocurrency is really important if you're going to put a dollar into it. So I go over pretty much my exact process as well as the tools that I use to be successful. So we will jump into a recording of that in a second. But first, I want to say thank you to today's sponsor. The Crypto Bobby podcast today is actually supported by Wonder Capital. It is the easiest way to invest in large-scale solar energy projects across the U.S. Bloomberg estimates that $2.8 trillion will be invested in solar energy by 2040. And with Wonder Capital's solar investment platform, individuals can now take advantage of this economic opportunity. In fact, people like you, people like me, have already financed more than 175 large-scale solar projects. And these solar energy projects create enough energy and electricity to power the equivalent of 5,000 homes, which helps to offset almost 75 million pounds of carbon dioxide emissions each year. So if you're looking to diversify some of your money outside of the crypto world, check out wondercapital.com/Bobby. That's WUNDER capital.com/Bobby to find out how you can begin investing in solar energy projects while earning up to 7.5% annually and also helping in the fight against climate change. Again, that is Wonder Capital, WUNDER capital.com/Bobby, where impact investing meets capitalism. All right, let's get into that conversation over from NAC3 in Los Angeles. Let's go. But today I want to talk about how I research crypto currency, crypto projects, crypto assets, whatever you want to call them, and some of the kind of different things that I do when it comes down to researching those projects, because it's a difficult thing to do, and there's a lot of like intricacies to it, and there's a lot of different ways you can check things out and approach things. So just want to give you like a little bit of insight into how I check out projects, and then take some questions at the end, or any questions that you guys have, just throw them at me. Make this as interactive as possible. So one of the things I was going to do is just use an example. Is anybody here familiar with Hashgraph? Couple people. It is not a traded token yet. A lot of shilling going on already before it even hits the market. But I figured we'd use that as like an example of how I would look at Hashgraph or start the process of looking at Hashgraph. So who here likes to read white papers? Put your fucking hands down. So one of the big things when it comes down to researching cryptocurrency is you need to read the damn white paper. Like, you actually, I know a lot of people just want to hop on YouTube and look for somebody and search in Hashgraph on YouTube and say, okay, here's a 5-minute video. I want to buy Hashgraph, and somebody's going to tell me, hey, I want to buy Hashgraph. Or you might go on YouTube and say, hey, 5 coins that are going to moon today, and they're all shit coins, but you need to read the white paper. And that is an intimidating thing for a lot of people. Why? Because white papers are long, they're confusing, they're supposed to be scientific. Most of them are just glorified marketing projects right now, but they're long and confusing. So instead of starting off with a white paper, there are a couple different things that you can do. Everything when I research a cryptocurrency or a crypto project, I try to save myself time, because if I find out in the first 30 seconds that the project is trash, I'm going to move on to the next one, and I don't want to spend 3 hours researching a coin that is the next BitConnect or whatever. So two of the things that I would say that you can do to start before you even read the white paper, because I know a lot of people put their hands up and say they like reading white papers, but let's be honest, nobody does. You can check out if there is a beta or a demo version of the product. If you can do that, that is something where you can pretty easily start using the product, and you can check it out, and you can see, okay, this product works, or it's supposed to work, or it actually functions, or you can maybe see, this is the dumbest thing alive, and I'm not going to actually read the white paper. So save yourself some time that way. Another thing that you can do is to, and I would recommend this in a lot of respects too, is to actually go into YouTube or to the company website or the project website and search for videos, search for content about the project. But when it comes down to that, there's a couple different things that'll happen. When you go onto YouTube, you're going to search Hashgraph, and you're going to see something like, will Hashgraph kill blockchain in 2018? It's probably not going to. Maybe it will, but it's probably not going to. But what you should actually be doing is finding videos from the actual teams themselves, because that's where you're going to get the explanation. You're not going to get as much of the explanation from any specific YouTubers who may or may not have a massive vested interest in that cryptocurrency. Try to find something from the actual project themselves. So in this case, the arrow goes to Hashgraph had a launch event in New York City last week or 2 weeks ago, recorded the whole thing. Rather than reading the white paper, or prior to reading the white paper, if you want to go to that, check that out, or a simple explanation of Hashgraph with pictures by the Hashgraph team. Like, that is about as good of a way as you can start in terms of researching. And the reason I say this is I'm still not saying don't read the white paper, but sometimes you might sit down, you might check out the white paper, and you're like, what the hell is this? Like, what is this technology? This will hopefully break it down a little bit simpler, so when you do read the white paper, you can get a better understanding of things as well. And yeah, here is a simple explanation of Hashgraph with pictures. Like, this is, this is literally what I did when I started researching Hashgraph and started checking it out, was I popped up the white paper and I was like, this is kind of confusing. I should probably start somewhere else. Why don't I look at pictures on YouTube? And it worked out all right, so. So, like I said, when I'm reading the white paper, I try to do a couple different things. The big thing I try to do is save my own time, because there's nothing more wasteful than spending 2 hours. I mean, some of these white papers, I think Hashgraphs is like 60 pages long. Some of the white papers are like 10 pages long and they're just throw them in the garbage. But some of them are pretty long and they're pretty intense, and it's not like you're reading Cat in the Hat. It's like technical, difficult things to understand and figure out. So if there is anything when you are reading, I try to save as much time as possible. So if there's anything that I specifically see where I can eliminate it, that's kind of how I go through a white paper, is if I'm reading it to potentially like invest or put money into it, or just trying to learn. If there's anything there that I think is just something I should toss in the garbage, I will eliminate it like on the spot. And that's kind of how I approach everything with crypto, is I'm extremely skeptical. You probably can't see that. I'm colorblind, so I don't know if I can't see that right now. But at the bottom it says, I'm very skeptical. And I mean, that's true. Like, I try to approach every single white paper, every single project with just total skepticism, and like, prove me wrong, actually prove to me that you can do maybe what you want to do or anything like that. And so the first thing that I look at in a white paper is the team. I think that you can pretty easily tell who is intelligent and who can execute on an idea just by looking at the team, and that's a great place to start, because if you start here and you have the former, you know, you have a CTO with a PhD in computer science from Carnegie Mellon, or you have somebody that was working at Mickey D's last week and is now starting up a blockchain company, raising $30 million on an ICO. I love McDonald's, but I'm going to go with the CTO with the PhD from Carnegie Mellon. That's just me. So that's one of the first and easiest things that you can do to, I think, check out a project and just like with a quick litmus test see, okay, the people that are running the project are actually individuals that might be able to execute on an idea. It doesn't guarantee that they will, but this is like one of the good quickest ways to start off, is just starting with the team. It's usually included in the white paper or at least on the website. And another thing I would do is, just because it's on the white paper, on the website, there's a lot of scams out there, there's a lot of bullshit, check out their LinkedIn, Google search them, find their past work history. Did they have anything to do with blockchain previously? Do they have any understanding of technology? Don't just trust what's ever in the white paper. Always try to verify it. Always try to confirm it, because there's a lot of times where people have put money into ICOs or into projects or anything like that, and the things that have been advertised are just completely false. So after I look at the team, if that checks off, if the team looks legit, Hashgraph's team looks legit, you know, prestigious backgrounds, worked at big companies, good education, I'll look at how does it work? How does the technology actually work? What are they trying to do? How does the technology work? What are they trying to do? And try to figure out exactly what the benefit of using this technology or using this type of solution might be. And in this case, when I'm looking at Hashgraph, They had a couple different things in the white paper that I thought were pretty helpful. The actual breakdown of, you know, where the consensus sits, where the smart contracts sit, where the cryptocurrency sits, and a lot of the other things like that. And then when I do look at it, I look at, like, does it provide anything new? Does it have any new value? Is there any new innovation whatsoever? And I try to find what the comparable projects are. Are there any comparable projects? Is there anything else out there that might be halfway similar to what is what they're trying to accomplish? And if there is something similar, number one, is it better than that? Or is it just kind of a ripoff or a copy or whatever it might be? And then on the other end of the spectrum, what are those projects valued at? If Hashgraph is raising money at, I think it's like $5 billion or something crazy, but if Hashgraph is raising money at $5 billion and they're somewhat similar to an IOTA or something like that, well, what's IOTA valued at? What's Ethereum valued at? What's NEO valued at? And that's what I'll try to do throughout that process as well. And one of the things that I'll do for that is I use on-chain FX, and a lot of times to find similar like platform plays, or if it's a security token, I'll find the value of that and try to see what the potential of maybe if it meets, exceeds, or goes above the value of the other competitors. And so token economics is a big thing too. This is something that I think a lot of people, like I heard some of the descriptions when we were talking about the different coins for groups. And everybody wants to throw everything on the blockchain. Not everything needs to be on a blockchain. Not everything, at least in my opinion, because I'm skeptical, not everything needs to be on a blockchain. Not everything needs to be decentralized. And a lot of the tokens, at least a lot of the utility tokens, literally have no utility whatsoever. And they're just a means for fundraising. That's kind of my personal opinion. A lot of these projects out there don't have, they're forcing a token into something that should just be a database and telling you that, hey, we're decentralized and this is going to provide some massive benefit when it's just making founders and people rich. So that's my skeptical view. But when I'm looking at the token economics, how is the token used? What is the purpose? What is there any reason that somebody would utilize this token? What is the potential for appreciation? Things like that. Does it make sense economically? In the case of Hashgraph, it's more of a platform play. Those are a little bit easier to look at, or in some cases, almost a little bit more make a little bit more sense than a lot of the utility tokens. But this is something where if you're looking at a utility token project, you really have to dive into this, because is there actually any utility behind using the coin? Is there anything there whatsoever? And if there's not, try to move on to the next one. And what's on the roadmap? This is something that I see on Twitter all the time, because I shitpost on Twitter 24/7. If you follow me, I'm sorry. but what's on the roadmap, and how far out are certain things, and what are those key dates? This is important too, because there are some projects out there that literally don't have anything coming to fruition until like 2022. Who knows what the crypto market's going to be by that point in time? Who knows if they're even going to be a company or a project or anything by 2020, whatever it might be. So you have to look at what's on the roadmap, and is there actually a realistic possibility that they can execute on any of this? If there's not, you want to dive into the roadmap as much as possible. And the specific key dates too that I like to, I like to see if they're not having a testnet, or if they do have a testnet, when did that launch? How soon was that? If they're launching on a mainnet, when are they launching on mainnet? Has it happened already? Check that out as much as possible. And then in a lot of cases, there's some type of like consensus mechanism change. Maybe it's a proof of work coin and it's moving to proof of stake. Maybe it is an ERC-20 token right now that is moving to its own kind of platform and play in the future as well. So check those things out as much as possible and try to figure out the roadmap there too. And so resources in addition to the white paper. Outside of the white paper, there's a couple different things that I'll also check out that make life easier, at least in my opinion, and help me out quite a bit when it comes down to it. So the first thing, if you guys aren't familiar with this, it's a pretty cool website, concourseq.io. These guys do like crowdsourced diligence for initial coin offerings, but they also keep all the initial coin offering stats up for all their previous projects as well. So they do some pretty, like, here's just a screenshot from literally like today of some of the projects that they have going on, or some of the ICOs that are going on right now. And then this is also good, I think, if you're trying to go back in the past, maybe something ICO'd 6 months ago and it's traded on Binance and you're thinking, hey, do I want to buy this? Do I want to you know, maybe throw some money into it, you can go on to Concourse Q, check that out. And I like that they call out scams as well. They literally have warning signs next to a lot of the shady projects, which is a great thing to kind of help you filter out things as well. And some of the, like, they have some really, really solid metrics, which is awesome. So if it comes down to, like, the token sale, they'll tell you certain things like, you know, what was the price of the token at the ICO? What was the personal cap? What was the ICO price for ETH or for USD? How much money did the pre-sale, how much money did people invest in the pre-sale? How much money did they invest in the main sale? A lot of different details that make your life, I think, a little bit easier. And you can kind of tell which projects might be, you know, might be a good place to check out as well. And another thing that I like to check out too is GitHub progress. So there are a lot of, it's a good time to sandblast. There are a lot of projects that from like a technical perspective might be dead. They might not really be contributing that much in terms of the engineering. They might be not be developing that much. One of the good ways you can check things out is to go to this website, cryptomiso.com. And this actually tracks the GitHub commits on a project basis for a lot of the tokens out there. So if you're trying to research a token and, hey, they haven't updated their GitHub in 3 months, maybe that's something you should be a little bit skeptical about. If they haven't contributed any code whatsoever to that, maybe there's a reason, maybe it's in another repo, whatever it might be, but it's something you definitely want to check out. And I think it's good to, not necessarily something you fully want to rely on, but it might help you to avoid throwing your money into something that has no active development going on whatsoever. And another thing that is interesting, and this comes from Concourse Q again, but they actually track Telegram. And Telegram is interesting in a couple of respects. So when I check out, when I evaluate a project, a lot of times I use like the Telegram web portal. So it's just a pain in the ass on the phone. There's so much content. So I use it on my desktop or on my laptop. But I'll go through, and if I'm looking at a project, I might go through, I'll scroll through the Telegram, see what the people are saying. I mean, a lot of times it's an absolute mess. How many people are in like a project Telegram? A lot? Is it awful? Yeah, it sucks. But sometimes there's like a tiny bit of good information in that. And so I'll scroll through for that as well. But this is a statistics that Concourse puts out. And this actually, you probably can't see it that well. But this tracks the number of additions of all time, 24 hours and 7 days for people joining Telegram groups. And in some cases that can be helpful because it can go to show like the level of excitement around a project. The one thing you do have to keep in mind is a lot of projects have literally been like noticing this and that people get excited that, oh my God, there's 50,000 people in this Telegram group. So I'm going to buy this cryptocurrency. So they're adding fake Telegram members and they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff like that. So you got to be aware of that. But this is definitely, I think, a solid place to check out and just see like, hey, is there anything maybe in the past 7 days that I don't know about that's really crushed it? Maybe I should check it out. Or is a project that I like, are they included in this and why? So. And then lastly, on-chain FX. I think this is something that, if you guys aren't familiar with on-chain FX, this is like some of the data points that I like to check out for when I'm evaluating crypto. They only have 65 projects at this time. So they don't have everything. It's not like CoinMarketCap that has all 1,500 cryptocurrencies or however many they have now. But on-chain FX is great because you can sort through things pretty easily on the same screen if you're looking at like price, 24-hour change against Bitcoin. But they also have some interesting metrics in terms of like how far down something is from the all-time high. Do you want to see if something might be a bargain now in comparison to others? Or what's the NVT ratio? Or they even just added GitHub commits in the last 90 days, in the last 365 days. So that's all stuff that you can look at with on-chain FX. And I think this is a really solid place if you're trying to check out a specific asset. It's a really really good place to start as well. And one of the last things is just creating a network of people. I don't know. I mean, I'm from New York. It's honestly one of the, in my opinion, like between New York and San Francisco, there's a lot. There's like a meetup every single night. It's a joke. You could go and you could talk to crypto to anybody, or not to anybody, obviously, but you could kind of go around and you could network quite a bit and you could build up a really nice network. Some folks might be from the middle of nowhere and it might be a lot harder, but I would definitely recommend trying to create a network as much as possible. Meet somebody here. If there's somebody you meet and talk to and they seem smart, get their phone number. The next time that you have a question about a project, bounce an idea off them. Say like, hey, I'm thinking about I'm thinking about Neo. What do you think about Neo? Is it good? Is it centralized? Is it a shitcoin? What do you think? And start having those conversations with people, because I think that helps to just make you like a little bit more aware. And you never, as much as you want to trust your own gut and you want to trust your own instincts, it's also helpful to have another set of eyes and ears to just bounce things off of, and just makes your life a little bit easier too. So we'll go to the next one so we don't have a seizure. But if anybody has any questions about that, definitely happy to take as many as we can fit in. So the question was, what do you think about a project if the tech seems really good, but the team is really young or inexperienced? Is there any like projects you're referring to or anything like that? Yeah. I don't necessarily see that as much as like the tech being really strong and the team not being as good, because usually the team and the tech are pretty well aligned. The one thing that I've seen a lot is that there's actually like good tech. They're just not marketing themselves. And that's something that I think is, there's like this weird balance that goes on between these just absolutely awful projects that are ranked in like the top 30 on CoinMarketCap that have like this big, you know, somebody with a big YouTube following or something like that that just shills it 24/7. And then there's some project with somebody from San Francisco or Silicon Valley and a team of 10 dudes that just, or females that just sit and code all day long and have PhDs and masters and don't market themselves at all. And their technology is 70,000 times better than something else, but the marketing isn't there. So that's always like an interesting thing that I kind of check out as much as possible. And it's unfortunate because like some of those companies or projects just don't get the recognition that some of the other ones do, that post on Twitter that they're doing some giveaway or who knows. You got to talk over the sandblaster. So the question is in regards to like an ICO that is not maybe that's a strong ICO, but maybe it's not selling out or it's not doing that well. To be honest, I think like a lot, like if it's a good ICO, it's gonna sell out. So there's definitely something to consider there. Like if you have an ICO or if you have a project like that and it's not raising money, the market's telling you something, and the market, like you could ICO, you know, dog walking on the blockchain and probably raise $20 million. And if you have a project and it's not doing that, or if you're thinking about a project and it's not raising that money and it's not selling out or whatever it might be, it's usually the market is telling you something that maybe it's just not super receptive to it. That's not to say like projects that haven't sold out of an ICO or anything like that, that haven't done well in the past. There have been, but I think that's the exception more than the, more than the average there. So that's one thing I would say. And then just also to that, I mean, I think just generally speaking in the environment right now, the ICO game is a lot more difficult than it was 6, 7, 8 months ago or so. And it's all moving outside of the U.S. Unless you're an accredited investor, it's all foreign citizens and accredited to the U.S. now. So.
So first off, big thanks for putting this all together, you and David. Yeah.
Cool.
What do you think is like a project that has amazing tech, but it's like undervalued or underrated and people don't know about it?
The question is what's a project with amazing tech that's undervalued or people don't know about it? That's a tough question. Shilling my bags. Yeah. We'll say AirSwap. We'll say AirSwap. I don't work there, so no. I didn't just start there. I think there's a lot of like interesting ones. There's like things like Chainlink. I don't think that's like incredibly highly valued, and I think has like a lot of respect in the industry. There's a lot of gems in like the smaller, like under $50 million market cap now, that are kind of working hard and just that don't have that mark. Like Chainlink doesn't really have incredible marketing, at least that I've seen. That was kind of like one of the ones that I was referring to. It's like solid tech, interesting use case, but maybe just doesn't market as much as some random wannabe Ethereum competitor that is never going to actually be utilized. So, yeah. The question is in regards to like specific maybe industry use cases versus like broad strokes like a Bitcoin or an Ethereum. And for me personally, I kind of go broader for the most part. Like there are some interesting use cases that might be cool for a specific industry, but I think that we haven't even figured out like the broad approach yet. Like Bitcoin and Ethereum are still so new, and to say that, you know, we're gonna have some type of decentralized solution for real estate or for this or for that, that isn't always as appealing to me. And I think that like investors kind of tend to like the hot things now are platforms. Everybody like Hashgraph, that's, I think they're raising at a $5 billion valuation or something like that. Dfinity is raising, I think, at a $2 billion valuation. Whereas a lot of these like smaller industry specific utility tokens might be raising or be valued at $30 million. So there's a huge disparity there, but I think it's definitely something, you know, it's also like where you have expertise. If you know a lot about real estate or something like that, and you can evaluate real estate projects and figure out which one is going to be the best one, maybe that's a good place for you to like concentrate your time and effort into as well. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, if you are newer to cryptocurrency, if you just don't have the time or the energy or whatever it might be to go on Binance or somewhere else and pick a bunch of cryptocurrencies, what do you do? Honestly, I would probably just say go to Coinbase, go to GDEX, and right now buy Bitcoin, Litecoin, or Ethereum. Probably just buy a basket of the three and roll with it. Coinbase, there's no ETFs yet. I think that's coming in the pipeline probably in the next like 2 years or so. You'll see like publicly traded ETFs on like the NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange. Coinbase also launched an index fund, but that's only for accredited investors, and I think charges a pretty fat fee as well. And it's literally just Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash, the four assets that are traded on Coinbase. So if you know, if you have trouble or you just, I mean, a lot of people like to overcomplicate shit and act like they're just like some incredible trader, and I definitely don't think that I am personally. So I mean, most people honestly would probably just be better off buying Bitcoin and holding it, or buying Ethereum or buying Litecoin and holding it, and just maybe lightly keeping up with the news and not trying to act like they're, you know, Gordon Gekko or somebody like that. There's a lot of YouTubers that are full of shit. I mean, I don't want to. I don't know. I could go on and on, but I feel like I don't know. But I mean, the guys here are obviously legit. I think there's some really good people in the space. It just depends on what you're looking for too. Like, there's some people that produce content all the time, and there's also some people that make content maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks, and it's very well researched, very technical, doesn't get as many views as other people do. I know a lot of people like are all about like the views and the subscribers and all that stuff. It doesn't matter. It's just how good is the content. Like somebody like Jackson Palmer, I don't know if you guys, creator of Dogecoin, he has a YouTube channel. He makes content like once a week, so he has nowhere near the subscribers of other people, but he is probably as knowledgeable, if not more knowledgeable, than like half the 95% of the guys on YouTube or the girls on YouTube. So they're definitely really smart people, and I think sometimes you can just search around too. I think there's on Reddit, there's literally a list of YouTubers to avoid. I was on the good guy list, so I'm pretty proud of that. but yeah, I would check that Reddit list of people to avoid, and that should do you good. Anybody who's promoted BitConnect too can take it. I think it's a wrap. So they're doing an ICO now. They're raising money now. I'm not participating in the ICO, so I haven't like the token metrics and the economics behind it. I don't think are like public, but from what I've heard, I think it's between like two and $5 billion market cap. I think it's closer to five. Yeah. I mean, the Telegram ICO is massive too. That's the biggest ICO right now, and that's mostly institutional investors, VC firms. So that's interesting to see that pan out too. I think that could be either a big positive for the industry or potentially a negative, but I think it's probably more on the positive side of the house. It'll be interesting to see kind of how regulators end up looking at that, because the regulation in the industry is, if you guys look at Blockfolio anytime soon and your crypto, while it's down, a lot of times it's on regulatory news, at least in the past 2 months. So the question is, if you evaluate a white paper, the team looks sick, the project looks awesome, but you haven't seen like all the progress, maybe how do you understand, like, can they actually deliver on this? Can they deliver on the promises? That's like 95% of crypto. It's all these grand visions and incredible things, and for the most part, pretty genius people, but it's also nowhere near, it's still in its like absolute infancy as far as execution. So a lot of it's just speculating on how strong you think the team is and can they actually execute on it and a lot of other things like that. I mean, most of it's just kind of educated guessing and gambling at this point in time when it comes down to something like, you know, investing in a platform that has no transactions or it's in a test net or, you know, that's, it's just trying to figure out what can potentially perform in the future and what, who can actually execute on that as well. Yeah, so the question is in regards to masternodes and different maybe ways outside of mining that companies are securing their networks, kind of the different like consensus mechanisms that they're using as well. And that's definitely, I think, the majority. So I think it's interesting because right now, legally speaking, at least in my opinion, a lot of the ICOs, the SEC has basically come out and said every single ICO is an unregistered security. And then from the standpoint of like proof of work coins aren't as hot right now in a lot of respects because I think it's sexier to run an ICO, and it's also easier that way. You just print up some ERC-20 tokens, and you go on your way. But then there's also other coins out there that have masternodes and different types of mining. The one thing I've seen kind of popping up recently is that mining, that is on a lot more solid regulatory ground. Like, nobody really says, when they say bad things about cryptocurrency now, for the most part, it's not about Bitcoin. It's not about, you know, it's not about things that have been mined. It's about the companies that are raising $100, $200 million, $30 million, whatever, through an ICO. But I do think masternodes and like proof of stake, Ethereum moving to proof of stake, that's going to be massive. Like how that goes, is that going to go really well? Is that going to go poorly? Where's that hash power from Ethereum going to go? Is that going to go to ETC somewhere else? So I do think that it's, I don't know exactly how it's going to pan out, but I do think that it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Yeah, so the question is, they call them cryptocurrencies, but very minimal of them are actually cryptocurrencies. Good question. I think that there's, I mean, cryptocurrency is like the common terminology. A lot of people say crypto. Chris Bernisky, if anybody has read the book Crypto Assets, that's what I'll say a lot, just because anything that's ICO'd is not a cryptocurrency. Like, that's just a basically an ERC-20 token that got printed. That's not a currency. That's just a token. So you could say tokens. But there are minimal, like, Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency, Litecoin is a cryptocurrency, Dash is a cryptocurrency, Bitcoin Cash is a cryptocurrency. Like, Ethereum isn't really a cryptocurrency. I guess it kind of is, but, like, maybe not. So I think, like, crypto for short is what a lot of people will say, and then crypto assets, nobody knows how to define it. One more? Two more questions? Friendliest countries to run an ICO. Well, Binance just moved to Malta yesterday or 2 days ago. So, or opening up operations, not fully moving. Gibraltar's very friendly to ICOs. Some areas of Asia, I think Singapore. You also have to take into consideration what it looks like from an investor perspective as well. Some places, when you know, if you're working with a law firm, there might be you know, Gibraltar might sound great, but is that the best place for you to be headquartered out of, even if it has, you know, favorable regulatory kind of feedback on ICOs? It's, you know, it's to be debated. To raise money? To, like, companies to, or countries to sell to? Well, you wouldn't raise money just from Gibraltar or from Malta. That would just be where you would be, your entity would be set up. The actual, like, legality behind the ICOs and kind of how you run them, I think it's kind of a complex topic. And, you know, whether you're doing it, you could do it in the U.S. and you could do it to accredited investors. You could do a Reg D. You could do it internationally. There's a lot of different ways you could approach it. So, I mean, I think it's just there's a lot behind that question that, I mean, we could probably take after. Just one final question. We'll go. Do I like Tether? Question about Tether. It's everybody's favorite question. So BitMEX Research, actually, if you guys follow BitMEX, they're the margin trading platform that you can use if you want to get liquidated with 100x leverage. They actually have a pretty good research arm. and they did a blog post recently about Tether, and they basically said that they believe that Tether actually has the money, and they're also using, I think they're storing it in Puerto Rico. So there is, I think Tether probably has the money backing it. I think that there's just not banks that really want to associate themselves with Tether. I also, at this point in time, honestly, like, I don't really give a shit about Tether. Like, if I have to, like, you know, if I have to transfer some money in and out, it's fine. But it's taxed the same as the USD, so it's really not that, at least in my opinion, a massive deal. And there's also a lot of, there's Basecoin, there's Haven, there's a lot of other stable coins that are coming out trying to compete and take market share from Tether and being like the legit Tether, because Tether is not, to this point in time, proven that they are legit. So I think that's it. So thank you, everybody.